children are going to invite the bells to begin the Dharma talk. And I understand that they have been learning to invite the bells and are doing a beautiful job. So I look forward to hearing your bells and coming back to our breath and just listening, letting go of all our thinking, all our words, and have the children lead us in practice. Beautiful bells.
They should go for so long even. Yeah. We can hear them.
Still going.
We never stop.
Should we listen till it stops? It goes on for a long, long time, doesn't it? It's really nice to just listen, just like you guys did.
Listen.
Have you guys ever been to a play?
Uh-huh.
On stage, where there's actors on stage?
I've even been in one.
You've been in one? Who's, which of you have been in plays? Wow, far out. How about everybody? How many people have been in plays? Yay! That's so much fun. I was at a play just a couple of weeks ago, and the very first character, it was a history play, historical play.
Was it about the Buddha?
No, it wasn't about the Buddha. It was about a king of England, Henry the Fourth. You know, it was Shakespeare in Ashland. And the very first character that came on the stage was the goddess Rumor. And she was wearing a costume that had tongues all over it. Kind of flapping tongues. Which tongues tend to do, don't they? Yeah, we talk a lot, don't we? So what Rumor did, though, throughout the play was she sort of inserted herself into conversations, and she exaggerated things. You know, so they were talking about somebody who was still alive, who had died, and they were saying, oh, he's still alive, and he's raising an army to fight the king. And so then everybody on the king's side got really afraid and were running around and thought, oh, this isn't good, you know. We're going to have to go to war. And then they decided to go to war because of what Rumor was saying. And so they... Rumor inserted herself into the next conversation about how many people were the other side amassing for the war. And she exaggerated it. She said, oh, there's 50,000 people on the other side. And then they said, oh, well, we have to go out and get all the farmers out of the field so they will be on our side. And they had to amass a great big army. And then she went over to the other side and she spread another rumor and said, they have 100,000 people on their side. And then that side got really, really afraid. And so some of the people ran away. And they were so afraid they completely left the country. So they didn't want to fight. They were afraid they'd get hurt. And so every step of the way, rumor was adding words to what was happening in the situation. And sometimes she was exaggerating. Sometimes she was lying. Sometimes she was criticizing. Sometimes she was gossiping. Sometimes she was saying bad things about other people. And what happened was then the situation got worse and worse and worse. And people were believing things that weren't true at all and making up stories. And people were afraid and people got really hurt.
In the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the one side got so afraid half of their people left, then the other side was able just to really destroy the other, that side.
And they would have to destroy the whole world if they go to the whole world.
Yeah.
Is that why the goddess's name was Rumor? Because she told rumors?
Mm-hmm. And she had flapping tongues all over her. Sometimes it's not always a goddess. Sometimes it's a god, you know, too. But somebody who talks up in a way that hurts other people. Has that ever happened to you at school? Yeah. Yeah, you know that?
Someone, but not me, the big war.
Yeah.
Someone said...
That's good.
Oh.
And do you know why it doesn't make a big war? Is because, I think, probably, because even though you feel hurt, you don't then make it worse, right?
Even though you feel hurt, you don't even make it worse.
Yeah, you don't then go spreading rumors about that person and try to turn everyone against them, right? Because when we do that, that's how war happens.
And you don't try to chop down shit because you're mad. That just kills you.
Yeah.
And talk to the people in the war.
But so anyway, you've known yourself how much sometimes when people talk irresponsibly, that it hurts other people. Sometimes it's been you. So that's what, you know, we're talking about today, the adults are talking about, because it happens not only with kids, it also happens with adults. Well, Vaughn, what would you like to say?
Next time I complain in a book, but it's not, it might be true and not true, but it's about the Buddha.
Oh, good. That would be really good.
Really big red book with, a goose and this guy with a halo.
Okay. So we would appreciate if you bring that in next time. Nova, what would you like to say?
We have this other book, and it's exactly about that. So there's this grizzly bear, and he's walking through, and he's like, what are you doing in my stomping path? Because he was mad about the birds chirping, and the sun was in his eyes, and the trees were in his way. And then the other guy was like, the trees are so pretty, the sun is so nice, and the birds sing the center birdie song. And so you can probably tell who the good guys and the bad guys are. And he's like, what are you doing in my stomping path? And he says, why are you trying to give me a present? And he says, what present? And he says, well, you tried to give me a punch in the nose, a kick in the stomach, and a big grizzle bear hug. I do not want those presents. And so I guess you'll have to keep them for yourself.
Okay.
And
so, you know what? It's time for you guys to stand up. And we really welcome that you're here, and we'd love to hear your stories. So thank you so much for coming. And if you could stand up. please, and turn around and bow to the Sangha. And we understand you're going to come eat lunch with us. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yay. We're so happy. Okay. We'll see you soon. This is going on the web. You guys want to move forward? Guess what I'm going to talk about today, huh? Fourth mindfulness training. Especially if you have a trouble hearing, come forward, please. I didn't exactly get where I was going with that. You have great energy. Well, so now we take up the fourth of the five mindfulness trainings, which is the mindfulness training on right speech. The first presentation of the as a precept is do not say harmful or untruthful words. And in the white-clad disciple, the sutra says, lay students of the Buddha, refrain from saying what is not true. Put an end to saying what is not true. They say only what is true, and they find great joy in saying what is true. They always abide in truth and are completely reliable, never deceiving others. They have uprooted from within themselves any intention to say what is not true. In this way, lay students of the Buddha study and practice the fourth of the five precepts. In Zen circles, they say, do not lie. Cut to the chase here. and I think the fourth mindfulness training is the hardest. It is the most intimate link that we have from thought to action. And words are a kind of action. And we tend to think of words as, you know, they're kind of ephemeral. They disappear. We say words and they're gone. But instead they have reverberations that go on. And it is the most direct link between thought and action. In one of the poems we read in the Zen tradition, Daiyo Kokushi wrote, wishing to entice the blind, the Buddha has playfully let words escape his golden mouth. Heaven and earth are ever since filled with entangling briars. And the most deepest understanding of that is that what is most true about you, about me, and about this world we live in, we cannot experience through words. It's only through a much deeper knowing, a letting go of our words and our ideas, that we can really know the truth. when we hear the word truth, you know, like when I just read the fourth precept there in the white-clad disciple, you know, we think of truth as something solid or real, or and the thing is that truth is moving. The truth of our reality is always changing, just as we are. Always it is that potential that's always manifesting, but it's never static. It's only touched in the moment. That's why we practice mindfulness. That's why we practice coming back to this moment. Because it's not, we can't touch it in the past, and we can't grasp it in the future. We only know it here. And then out of that truth, you know, the Buddha, when he realized that, when he stood up from under the Bodhi tree, having seen the Venus star rise in his own heart as his own being, he thought, how in the world do I ever communicate this? And he spent 7 days wondering about that. And then he playfully let words escape his golden mouth. And we've been trying to figure it out ever since. In the Bible, there's a story about the a group of people who went out to the desert, and they wanted to make build a very tall, tall tower so that heaven and earth were not so far apart. And they were out in the desert, and they only had mud and straw, and so they baked clay bricks and bit by bit built this tower, this really tall, tall tower. And they were all working together as one to build this tower. And as they got higher and higher in the sky, they were more and more proud of what they were doing, and they were more, they felt they were closer to God, and they were the chosen people, and they were in a better space. So there was a real arrogance that was arising as they built this tower. And when God saw it, he destroyed it. And he, all the people, he changed so they couldn't speak the same tongue. They couldn't speak the same language. Everyone spoke a different language. And they were dispersed throughout the world, unable to communicate with each other. In a way, it's kind of a story of the fall, again, you know, that moving from that place of oneness into a place of separation where we no longer can be in connection and in contact with each other. And this mindfulness training is very much about how we then find it in our hearts, that place of oneness, and express it in our communication with each other. When the Tower of Babel fell, people were only able to babble to each other, and there was no sense of connection anymore. So we have a fourth mindfulness training that points us in a direction of how we can have our words be bridges. There is one reality we all live in, but we all perceive it separately. And if we are speaking only from our individual and separate reality, often our words are just projection of our own mind, our own thinking, our own interpretation of situation. That might be the first difficulty. But the second difficulty is when that becomes compounded with people getting together and spreading rumors, talking about things they're not sure of, hearsay. criticism, gossip, exaggeration, innuendo. Maybe saying something to impress other people, like they're in the know. But also supporting others then in that, joining together in that. We all know the pain of that. Every one of us has experienced it. And when we take up the practice of the fourth mindfulness training, we make that commitment to the best of our ability not to participate in that kind of talk. There is a time in the life of the Buddha when he was teaching in Kosambi, and there was a woman named Magandika who was very attracted to the Buddha and liked him very much. And because she was a very wealthy and beautiful woman from the Brahmin class, she was really used to having a lot of attention. And the Buddha treated her the way he equally with everyone else. And she longed for his special attention and made efforts to put herself in a situation where she would get special attention from the Buddha. But when that didn't succeed, she bit by bit grew to hate him and really started a vendetta against the Buddha. Her affection turned to this hatred. How could anyone not see her power and beauty? And as it turned out, she ended up marrying a king, King Udendi, and so she gained even more power. And then she started spreading rumors and insults about the Buddha in the town of Kosambi. And she manipulated situations that tried to prevent him from teaching. And the Buddha's response was to say that to not take it personally, to not respond to it out of anger. What he said was, harmful words hurt the person who spreads them the most. They may hurt us, but they hurt the person who speaks them the most. He said, it's like spitting into the sky. The spit doesn't damage the sky near as much as when it falls in the face of the person who spat. The air is not sullied, but the person's face is. So, you know, this is a really important mindfulness training, I think, to look into. And I think it starts with, you know, again, like Thay said yesterday, looking into our own suffering from this. I know school children suffer a great deal from this. And almost everybody I know has tales from high school of the kind of malice and pain that comes from. And when we really look carefully at that and how it's been in our own lives and where it's arisen in our own lives, with our friends, in our family, with people who don't know us, and we touch that pain and we are able as well to touch compassion for ourselves. So that our hearts are put at rest and we touch some peace. I know when we call these things to mind, you know, we feel anger. We feel self-protection. We feel defensiveness. It's very natural. There was a time when at Plum Village, when there were the first few monastics, and some of the senior lay people were very upset because the monastics were quite close to Thay. And they had been very close to him and then felt they were there wasn't a space for them to be as close to Thay as before. And people were criticizing and saying things that were about the monastics, about the situation, about Thay. And I remember once when Thay, in a Dharma talk, said, you know, I'm just a human being. And some of the people still didn't understand that. And so Thay has, over the years, put more and more distance. So it's harder for people to put those kind of projections onto him now. It's really important in Sangha that we're careful about our words. Because they are projections. And at the same time, none of us is perfect. None of us ever will be perfect. It's not the point. But the point is, as it's expressed very clearly in the most recent reiteration of the fourth mindfulness training, when anger is manifesting in me, I'm determined not to speak. I will practice mindful breathing and walking in order to recognize and to look deeply into my anger. I know that the roots of anger can be found in my wrong perceptions and lack of understanding of the suffering in myself and in the other person. A lot of the wording that is being included in this last reiteration of the mindfulness trainings also is incorporated or is taken out of the wording from the 14 precepts of the Order of Interbeing. And the sixth mindfulness training in the Order of Interbeing speaks very much about our anger and how to practice with it. Much of our harmful words come from anger. A sense of rejection. But it's really important, I mean, to look in our lives and see where, you know, the harmful words come from. And then just make our own deep commitment to practice with them. And realizing that, you know, speaking from a place of harming is speaking untruthful words. And so when the fourth mindfulness training says using words that inspire confidence, joy, and hope, that's what we take time to think about, you know. And in that time of coming back to ourselves and breathing and calming our mind, letting the flames and the tongues stop wagging, the flames die down. And really, you know, it's the tongues that are wagging in our own mind. You know, I'm sure this is true. I know they did that. And coming back to restore ourselves. When we really have touched the deepest truth, that is, of course, our deepest longing. And there's something really wonderful that happens when all of a sudden, I mean, we have that intention, we practice with that intention, and then the words that we need come up. The words that we're able to say what we need to say, but in a way that creates peace, harmony, and joy. Ease. That don't inflame the the fires of war, but put them to rest. The Buddha said that the effort of our practice is to continually observe and master our senses. And not even the most senior disciples can afford to be lax in their practice. We recognize that every day at Mountain Lamp when we chant the four bodhisattvas' vows. The second one is greed, hatred, and ignorance rise endlessly. I vow to abandon them. And it's very helpful every day to remember that. I think of any of the five mindfulness trainings, this is the most important one to read at the first thing when you get up in the morning. Not just to read it as words, but to read it, to let it resonate in your belly, in your heart, in your mind. And set it as an intention, as a course through the day. You know, one of the really wonderful things about practice is that we set the intention, we do the best we can, and then we let go. And we let the practice then carry us, let the practice protect us and move us. And when we notice that it has protected us, we feel such great joy. We feel such freedom and gratitude. So I think that, you know, one of the things, it is important to look within ourselves here. Because it is our thoughts that are the basis for our words. And it is our words that are a living action in the world. And in thinking about, you know, harmful words or untruthful words, and they really are the same, it is important to think of, you know, the subtle ways we do this as well as the gross ways. You know, speaking from anger, of course, is more of a gross way. But just as in Henry IV, part two, the god of rumor, through innuendo, exaggeration, and gossip was able to inflame a terrible, terrible situation in the kingdom. So it is the subtle ways that we talk with other people behind their, or talk behind someone's back. One of the things that's really important, I think, as a member of a Sangha, is that we talk directly to each other. If we have something to say, we say it right to someone's face. We don't gather a lot of material about somebody by talking around to this person and that person, trying to prove ourselves right. We don't know what we're talking about. But very much we take the practice of returning to the island of self. And breathing in and breathing out. Until we have touched a place of ease and freedom. And then if we have something to say to someone, before we say anything, we read this precept. And the wonderful thing about practice, as we've been talking about through all of these, is the vast generosity that is the core of all of this. That the truest and deepest spiritual practice is to offer our absolute best and then let go of what comes back. So we don't talk with someone so they'll agree with us, so that they understand us, so that they apologize. We give our best as a gift. And then what comes back is like flowers for the void. We let it go. And if anger arises, then we come right back to ourselves. Practice mindful breathing. Looking deeply to understand. You see, what happens in that kind of practice is there's a deep transformation that happens, that we touch some of that light, some of that real truth that is beyond self and other in practicing like that. And that is the greatest gift, to touch that, to begin to know that a little bit. And when we have no attachment to outcome, we can touch that. And if indeed, you know, the response is something that brings up more anger, more upset, more frustration, then we continue to practice with that. Because eventually, with the intention of practicing, it will be transformed. And I can speak many, many examples of this, and yet it's only meaningful if you've really done it yourself and seen for yourself and had that kind of understanding arise within yourself. And it means letting go of what we think we know, what we think we understand. Because when we hold on to something like, this is my understanding, this is what's true about the situation, then we're not in the present moment anymore. We're holding on to something that was from the past. What happened in Thai Sangha in that situation I mentioned earlier was those people who were not able to practice with the situation left the Sangha. And truly, when people leave the Sangha, it is always because they have not been able to transform. It's always that. Because we can transform anything. And that is our practice, to transform it all. And it sounds like, well, that's hard work. But in reality, what it is touching our true nature, our absolute freedom, and the blessedness that holds us in every moment. It is touching, as Thay says, the kingdom of God. Where we know that when we look at someone else's face, it is like looking in a mirror. They are no other than we are. In practicing this, we see truly that, you know, when our words have hurt somebody, they hurt us as well. And when our words touch light, love, joy, that's also what is transmitted. Tayo says you know, if there's somebody who's not happy in the Sangha, then the Sangha is not a happy Sangha. And sometimes people come to Sangha thinking, oh, the Sangha is responsible for healing me. And certainly the Sangha is there to support us to practice. But ultimately, you know, our healing is our own responsibility. That's why we come back to the island of self over and over again. And recognizing that our thoughts are indeed, can be entangling briars. That our thoughts are the basis for our action and our words. So when we come back to the present moment and we let go of all our thinking, all our planning, all our hurt, all our suffering, not as a way of pushing it away, but knowing it's there, and still at the same time, we can touch that deeper reality that we are all together in this. Touch that deeper reality that the leaves are green and breathing with us, for us. Touch that deeper reality that the earth is there supporting us, holding us, part of us. Touch that truer reality that the sky is pouring itself forth with water, the oceans are pouring themselves forth for our benefit, and that we are held in all of that, not separate. And then it's no matter what is in our hearts it's so much easier to come back to the truth of this moment. And let that truth hold the suffering, hold the pain, hold the projections, hold the separation. It's like we take refuge. And inevitably, in this process, in this practice of transformation and healing, there is a time where we have to take refuge, where what is coming up is bigger than what we can hold ourselves. And if we can take refuge, we take refuge in the Sangha, which means we come to Sangha and we practice. And we let the fact that the whole Sangha is there practicing with us support us. It's not a matter of going and telling somebody, oh, I'm suffering because of this, 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 and that's going to necessarily heal it. Because it's not, and we know that. We know that's just spreading it around. It's returning to the island of self. And letting what we know is most true about ourselves, what's most true about reality, that great truth of the Buddha, be there supporting us and holding us. When we let go in that way, then the Buddha steps forth as you and as me. The words that we speak are the words of the truth, manifesting the truth. As the sutra says, words that promote understanding, love, joy, and inclusiveness, that inspire confidence, joy, and hope. It's not something we have to manufacture. And I know at some point it's just you have to trust that this is true, but that those are the words of truth. Those are the words of the Buddha. Those are the words of our Buddha nature. The words of the great empty oneness from which all things arise. It's important to practice deeply enough to begin to understand this in our own hearts so that we can share this with others and continue with our practice of greed, hatred, and ignorance rising endlessly and our moment-by-moment abandonment. So I like this mindfulness training so well because it is, there's no question, it's very alive all the time because we are talking with each other, connecting with each other all the time. And it's certainly not a way to beat ourselves up. It's a way to very much a clear light on the path. And hopefully bit by bit becomes the lens that we begin to view the world through. Whenever we do view the world through the lens of this particular mindfulness training, it is a huge victory, a huge blessing. And it's most important to notice when we succeed. It's more important to notice when we truly practice this than when we don't. So take this as a practice for every day. For the next week, read this mindfulness training first thing in the morning. Let it be the intention of your heart, of your mind, of your being. Put on those glasses and then live in the question of how do I do this? How do I do that? And let the question, you know, speak as much as you from your own mind. And when it does speak, notice it. Say, yeah, great, good. And when it doesn't speak, it's okay. Just come back to this present moment again. Just come back to start over again. Begin anew. Each moment is brand new. In Hakuin Zenji Sang of Zazen, Hakuin says, those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, do away with countless demons. That's not the exact words. Go ahead, say it louder.
Treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings.
Much more, those who turn about and bear witness to self nature that is no nature, go far beyond mere doctrine. Here, effect and cause are the same. The way is neither two nor three, nor are we two nor three. So, take it to heart and know that, you know, the blessings will come out of it. And you don't have to work really hard and you don't need to beat yourself up. And eventually, you know, in practicing this, you do see indeed that self-nature is no nature. And that the five mindfulness trainings are not a doctrine, are not dogma, are not something separate than the ultimate reality, the deepest expression of the compassionate nature of the Buddha's wisdom.